Today we start with the bottom chapter, should be the last section of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So we are coming towards the end of the third question. The third question was, Kim Asit? How does a person sit? Mean, how does a person control the senses? And 2.61, Krishna dropped the first drop of bhakti. Matparaha, he described. So, in this particular answer, it starts from 58 onwards. So in 58, Krishna describes, okay, here he withdraws the senses like a tortoise withdraws. In 59, he says, actually doing this is very difficult unless one gets a higher taste. 60 describes how it is difficult by telling that even a person with discrimination and endeavor, discrimination is internal, endeavor is external, with both still he will fall down. And 61 describes how he will succeed. Now, in order to describe the potency and the necessity of a treatment, the doctor will sometimes describe the consequences that come if the treatment is not followed. So like that, Krishna describes, yukta asit mat paraha, fix the mind on me, as the treatment is telling. Now to describe how grave will be the consequences if one does not follow this treatment, Krishna describes the next two words. That means, if we always have to think about something, it may be possible to be physically inactive, but it is not possible to be mentally inactive. So, we are always doing something mentally. So, what are we doing exactly mentally? Krishna says, if we are not engaged in his service, thinking about him, then we will inevitably come down to thoughts of sense gratification. And when we do that, what the consequence will be? Krishna will describe in verses 62 and 63. Vihayato vishayam pumsaha.
Vihayato vishayam pumsaha.
Sangasteshu pajayate.
Sangasteshu pajayate.
Sangat sanjayate kamaha.
Sangat sanjayate kamaha.
Kamat krodho vijayate.
Kamat krodho vijayate.
Krodhat bhavati sammoha.
Krodhat bhavati sammoha.
Sammohat suti vibhrama.
Sammohat suti vibhrama.
So this is the fall down sutra.
There is a success sutra, but this is the failure sutra. This is the way if somebody follows this, no matter where a person is situated, the person will actually fall down. Concise way to describe. Let us see what are the stages Krishna describes in this. Contemplation is the first stage. This is dhyayato. And after that, the next stage is sangha. So I will put the emotions over there, you can understand how the emotions are. I like it. At this same, it is a little harmless. I just like it. Then there is lust. So lust means, when Krishna is calm, it becomes a very strong, uncontrollable craving. And then calm becomes krodh. Krodh is, who can stop me from getting it? Who can stop me? So this krodh is towards the obstacle that we face in getting sense gratification. Who can stop me from getting it? क्रोधात् भवति सम्मोह सम्मोहात् स्मृति विभ्रमः सम्मोह Sammoha leads to Smriti Vibhramaha. So Smriti Vibhrama. Smriti Vibhrama means I forget. Forgetfulness of right and wrong. Forgetfulness of good and bad. And then last is Buddhinasho. So Buddhinasho means mistaking the bad to be the good. When that happens, then actually there is pranashyati, there is fall down. It just begins with a moment. Let me just consider this for a moment. Dhyayato. It's passing attention. But we let a passing attention become more than a bit of passing attention. So, the whole, we'll look at this from a gross point of view to a more subtle point of view. The whole advertising industry works on the Dhyayata principle. It uses all the sense objects to see. See, come on, see. If we look at the shopping malls, I think I talked about the issue of how the shopping malls, they are there, they show all the objects on all sides. If we can see all the objects, they increase our dhyayata. The advertisements increase our dhyayata. Now, you see, we have a government that is apparently democratic. But basically, in democracy, everybody has freedom to choose what they want, apparently. However, people's choices or tastes are determined by what they see, what they encounter in the culture around us. So, what happens is, all the democracy at one level seems to give people freedom to choose. But, what they will choose will depend on what all options they have from which to choose. And the options that they will have to choose from will depend on which options are the most visibly available to them. And because of that, basically, modern society, the wealthy get the power to manipulate the tastes of the common people. I'll repeat, this is how the first point is that the advertisements, they use the Dhyayata principle. How do they use the Dhyayata principle? The wealthy manipulate, I'll explain how they manipulate the tastes of the common people. How do they manipulate the tastes of the common people? Whatever is advertised most aggressively, this is what I should take. And whatever is not to be advertised, that is, whatever is not advertised, people don't come to know about it. Now in the West, there was a very aggressive campaign against traditional or alternative forms of treatment. In several European countries, Ayurvedic treatment is illegal. And not only illegal, in some places it is banned. And even in India, you know, there was one this in 2611, there was one anti-terrorist squad investigator or fighter, whatever you want to say. He was severely wounded. And he was taking the treatment and allopathic treatment didn't work.
And then he took ayurvedic treatment. Now he is much better. Of course, he is badly wounded. But the last 3 years, the government has said that, no, ayurvedic treatment, we cannot reimburse it. Because Ayurveda is not a bona fide school of us. So in India, which is the place where Ayurveda originated, the Indian government is saying that, you know, Ayurveda is not a bona fide treatment. That's why if you produce bills for ayurvedic treatment, under our law, we cannot reimburse it for that. So this is insane. But how has this happened? This is the power of propaganda. This is the power of propaganda. So, actually speaking, the opinions and tastes of people are shaped largely by propaganda. Hitler said that, tell a lie, loud enough, long enough, and bold enough. 3 things. People will believe it to be true. Tell a lie, loud enough, long enough, and bold enough. And people will believe it to be true. This was actually the slogan of Hitler's secretary. Hitler had operated himself to launch a hate campaign against Jews. Although Germany is not a very big country, a large number of Germans cooperated with Hitler when he wanted to annihilate the Jews. So actually, this is the same thing that the Bhagavatam is saying, Satyatve Dharshtyam Evahi. Bhagavatam says, what is the character of Kali? One of the characters of Dharshtyam means audacity. Dharshtyam Evahi. So, or the most audacious person will be considered to be the most fruitful. Therefore, now the sense of this can come to us through our eyes, through our ears, through various ways. So, tyatve dharshtimeva. So, how does this whole Dhyayato principle work? The sense objects are made more and more accessible and visible to us. And then we start contemplating on it. And how does this work? First, let us think about it. Every time we think about it, thoughts are going in and gradually they are going into desires. They will grow stronger, stronger, stronger. And when they become irresistibly strong, then still there may be some social constraints, there may be some cultural constraints, and then people start rebelling against those constraints. And that is krodha. And after krodha, then there is some more. Now, let's look at 2-3 incidents of how this fall occurs to understand the point. Now, Vishwamitra, and Prabhupada quotes him in the purports here. What happened was, he was doing his meditation, but his Menaka came and she just tingled her ankles. So from the sound there was the Hayato, in the eyes there was the Hayato. And then from that point, he just increased. And then he fell away. So basically in his case, he was doing some other activity. He was not doing exactly emotional activity at that time. He was doing yogic austerity for getting mystical powers. But whatever it was, he got diverted from the path. So this is an example where a person is intentionally provoked by somebody else. This person is intentionally provoked by somebody else. And now if you look at Yati Maharaj, then he was not exactly provoked. He went out to help somebody. Sarvishta was in distress, fallen in a well, and he came to rescue. So, at one level, with Vishwamitra, somebody came to tempt him. And with respect to Yayati, somebody came to tempt him, and he also did not want to seduce anyone. But, either way, the end result was same. Both of them got distracted. He was following the path of yoga, Vishwamitra. Yayati was following the path of dharma, the religious ruler. But he got distracted from the dharma, so infatuated by the whole thing. Then, after that, what happened? He realized after a very long time what was happening. So either way, whatever is the intention of a person, Yati's intention at one level was compassionate. So Vishwamitra's was actually to at one level transient. But somebody came and tempted him. The Hayato principle will work whatever be our intention. If one is not connecting the intention with Krishna, we have to consume Raja Yoga. So now, only the person is able to connect whatever one is pursuing with Krishna. Prabhupada explains that. And if one doesn't connect with Krishna, if you see, Bharat Maharaj, his intention was compassionate when he wanted to save the deer. But still, Hayato Vishana Kamsa Bhakta. Now, of course, in all these three cases, in the case of Yayati Maharaj, Yayati or Vishwamitra or Bharat Maharaj, actually the fall that happened was not sinful. And there's no description of Vishwamitra having sinful reactions for what he did. Why was it not sinful? Because in one sense, there's a proper union, marriage or whatever, and with respect to one another's attachment. But so in these examples, what is emphasized is not the sinfulness of the fall that happened, but the distraction that happened by it, the distraction was spiritual. And the sinfulness is talked about, say, when Ravana is abducting Sita. So Ravana also, what happened was Shurpanaka provoked him by giving very seductive description of Sita's beauty. But in this case, Sita was the married wife of somebody else, and that's why his actions are sinful, and moreover Ravana not on the path of dharma. But the point is that whoever it is, whether a person is demoniac or a person is godly, person is intending to get material power or person is intending to transcend material existence, if dhyayato happens, dhyayato will lead to this. Now, as devotees, we can't avoid contact. But the verse is not saying drishyato, it is saying dhyayato. The difference between, say, observation and contemplation. So here, the verse says that if we are doing yukta asita natparaha, means we are connecting with Krishna regularly, fixing the mind on Krishna, then even the sense objects come, we offer those sense objects mentally to Krishna. What does it mean? Offer the sense objects mentally to Krishna. That means that Krishna, you are the enjoyer. Just as when we get some good food to eat, we have some purposes to offer to Krishna. Because all is mobile, it's to offer to Krishna. So like that, the devotee, offer the sense objects to Krishna. Now, so here I'll talk about, this may seem a little theoretical, but we can just understand how it works. See, at the grossest material level, objects of a man sees a woman as an object of enjoyment. Or in general, we see everything as a sense object for our enjoyment. Then, if somebody is trying to follow a spiritual path, then one sees the same thing as an object of danger. Source of enjoyment. Source of danger. Now in this case, the scriptures may give some examples like say, the senses are like snakes, sense objects are like snakes. These are the Gyani type examples. We just analyze, I'll just list out their perceptions, then we'll see. Then within a culture and society, a woman is seen as a mother. Then, in a devotional society, a woman will be seen as a Vaishnavi. And at the highest transcendental level, the advanced devotees will see women as gopis, as the associates of Krishna. So this is the perception at the materialist level. This is the perception at the jnani level. This is the perception at the dharmic level. This is the perception at a devotional level, and this is the perception at a pure devotional level. So, you see, is women are the source of enjoyment at the materialist level. By materialist, we mean just pure godless materialism. or it can be any kind of materialism. But at a devotional level, which is much higher, initially, when a person starts the transcendental path, then one understands women are source of danger, a source of distraction. They can be causes of fall down. Therefore, that is at the jnani level. Now, the source of danger, and there is, in the jnani, there are different kinds of perception. And we will see in our literature, we will find different kinds of perception talked about over here. So, there will be source of illusion. This is also at the jnani level. So, here sometimes it may say, like, you know, a bag of foul smelling elements and things like that. Those sort of persons will come over here. What is the body that you are attracted to? This is also at the jnani level. So, Purana says in the Aila Gita, Tanmam Sridhirisna Yumedo Majjasti Samhatam Vinmutra Puyeramatam Kriminam Kiyadantaram. So, he is saying, how so attracted to the body of this Purvashi? But what is it? Tanmam Sridhirisna Yumedo. Skin and flesh and muscles and bone and vidmutra puye ramatami is saying is filled with stool and urine and sweat. And if I enjoy this body, then he's saying kruminam kiyadantaram. Krumi is like a worm. This is what is the difference between me and a worm? He is actually talking at the kruminam. So if you see, as sadhakas, or rather we are living in a materialist society, the materialist society primarily sees the sense objects as sources of enjoyment. And initially, if we look at Srila Prabhupada's writings, Prabhupada will often talk about women at the jnani level. So for example, the whole story of liquid beauty is at the jnani level. What is this world we are talking about? It's filled with only four foul smelling substances. And when we talk about a jnani level, that's not necessarily something which is contra-devotional. It's not contrary to devotional principles. It's important. But within a cultural society, if we are living in a society where there are also women, then we have to learn to develop a cultural vision. And that cultural vision is we see women as a mother. So we call women Mataji, and it will take time for us to develop that vision. But over a period of time, it's not just the act of calling, but the whole culture where we understand that Krishna is the center and everything is meant for Krishna's service. Then gradually that vision will come. But in general, as sadhakas who are young and have passion in our bodies, we also need to take shelter of jnana. See, we will ultimately need bhakti. Only by the remembrance of Krishna and by the mercy of Krishna we will become free from illusion. But before we become free from illusion, we need to recognize that it is illusion. Before we become free from illusion, we need to recognize that it is illusion. Because the power of Maya is so much that we don't. See, people who are in Maya don't realize they are in Maya. This is so enjoyable, let me enjoy it. So to recognize that it is an illusion, the jnani vision is also quite important. We are not becoming jnanis by that, but we are just adopting that attitude. So Shankaracharya has verses like that also, Srila Prabhupada quotes. And these verses help us to understand that the important point is that avoid dhaya. So even when we analyzing, okay, this body is just a bag of flesh and this and that. At that time also, it's not that we think about it. It's more that we analyze the philosophical point, not contemplate on the form, because even that can lead to agitation. So, basically what is happening over here, we have a particular way of contemplating. An alternative way of looking at it is offered to us by the Vedic culture and the Vedic philosophy. And the more we can develop the devotional vision, the more our life will become stable. The more our life will become stable. So initially, we have to have the vision that this is danger, this is danger, this is danger. And it's important to recognize that it is danger. But as it becomes purified, then we can develop the devotional vision also. Any questions about this? Let's move forward. Now what Srila Prabhupada quotes in his two-part course is, he quotes about Lord Shiva getting annulled, but Haridasa Thakur did not get annulled. Now interestingly, this may seem that is Prabhupada saying that Haridasa Thakur is greater than Lord Shiva? That is not the point over here. The point is, Prabhupada is comparing processes over here. He is not saying that Shiva is, Haridasa Thakur is greater than Lord Shiva. He is saying that in this particular instance, Lord Shiva was doing meditation. He was in yogic meditation. He was not exactly doing devotional service over there. And Haridasa Thakur was practicing devotional service, chanting the holy names. So he is using these two personalities as examples to illustrate the comparative potency of the two processes. Sometimes if some people who are coming from a pure bhakti background, they feel offended. When you say that one particular devotee or sampradaya is considered greater than Lord Shiva, that is not the point which is being made over here. The point, emphasis over here is that process. Which process is more important? And that is what Srila Prabhupada illustrating through this. Then he goes on to describe Yukta Vairagya and Phalgu Vairagya. And Prabhupada explains that the devotees take prasadam in Krishna consciousness, the non-devotee rejects it as material, rejects it as material. So Prabhupada will say that one time he was in his room and the devotees came and offered him that, so he took a rasgulla and said, "You eat rasgulla and you go back to God." Well, it is param drishto anivartate. Of course, eating rasgulla is not the only way to go back to God. It is an important point, isn't it? That is a devotional culture that is there. So, in fact, if you see when Sarvamukhacharya took the prasad, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had brought from him early in the morning, the next day after his conversion, so he just immediately took the prasad. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him, "Hey, you are a Brahmana, you are not taking your sandhyavandana, you are not taking your bath, directly you are taking the prasad." So then he immediately quoted, Prapti Matrena Bhokta Udyam. He quoted from the Padma Puran, as soon as you get prasad, it should be honored. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so ecstatic over there. And he decides in the sea, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt that his descent had become successful. As if he had conquered all the three worlds. That's why this. Now, what does it mean? Now, is it that as soon as you get prasad, eat it? Is that the main lesson of the past day? Not exactly. The principle is much deeper. The principle over here is that Sarvam Bhattacharya was a follower of the impersonal path earlier. And in the impersonal path, they may also, actually, they don't believe so much in the principle of mercy. Their idea is our rigid, analytical following of the rules is what will purify us. So, his faith earlier was in the rules, in the analysis of the rules. Whereas when he took this prasadam, he put aside the rules for the sake of the mercy. So, what this immediate taking of the prasadam indicated was that he has developed faith in the principle of mercy, which indicates that he has developed faith in the process of bhakti. And that was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's success. So, as devotees, certainly the point is that prasadam can offer the higher taste, but we have to realize that it is a higher taste. If prasadam offers the higher taste, but you have to understand the higher taste. If we take prasadam materially, then taking too much of the prasadam can also stimulate our material desires. So now here in verse 63, Krishna has concluded the answer to Kim Asit. Now he will start the answer of Vrajeta Kim. So in the answer, the Asita word came only once in 61st verse. Yukta Asita Matparaha. 2.61. Now Vrajeta will come several times in this verse. But in this section from 64 to 72, in this, the word charan comes. Vrajeta means to move. Charan means also to move. This is not charan, charan. Charan is feet. Charan is to move. Charan. Like Brahma, charati. One who moves in Brahma, brahmachari, like that. Charan. So, Raga Dvesha Vimuktaistu.
Raga Dvesha Vimuktaistu.
Vishayanindriyaisharan.
Vishayanindriyaisharan.
Atmavashayirvideyatma.
Atmavashayirvideyatma.
Prasadamadigacchati.
Prasadamadigacchati.
Raga Dvesha Vimuktaistu. We free from attachment and aversion. Vishayanindriyaisharan. Attachment and aversion for what? The movement of the senses toward the sense object. Atma vishaya vidhaya atma. And control the senses. Prasadam digachi. You get the mercy. So what is this prasadam? It is not the Mahaprasada Govinda prasad that we talk about. The word prasad here refers to purity. Purity. Well, they have definitely put that prasad here means purity. That means when one follows the rules and regulations, one will attain purity. Do we need purity to follow rules and regulations, or do we get purity by following rules and regulations? Both. There's some level of purity required, but by following rules and regulations, we get purity. So he's saying that yes, we may not be pure right now, but prasadam is mercy. But what happens by that mercy means we become pure. That means those desires go away. What Krishna is telling is, like I mentioned in the earlier class also, that we keep struggling with temptation again and again and again and again. Keep fighting and saying no, again attempts and again we keep saying no. But at one particular time, it's like illumination. This is false. So it may have happened in the past for us with some other temptations. It will happen with various temptations as we move forward. So that prasada refers to that purity. That moment of illumination is like, this is not a source of enjoyment. How could I have thought this is a source of enjoyment? That is purity. How that will happen? That will happen with the following of rules. Raga Dvesha Muktaistu Vishayan Indriyaischaran. So when one doesn't let the senses go toward the sense objects, Atma Vashayi, one keeps them under the control of the Atma. How? Vidheya Atma, by being following Vidhi, by following the spiritual rules and regulations. Then one will be able to attain peace. Let's move forward. Prasade sarva dukkhanam.
Prasade sarva dukkhanam.
Hanirasyopajayate.
Hanirasyopajayate.
Prasanna chetaso yashu.
Prasanna chetaso yashu.
Buddhi paryavatishtate.
Buddhi paryavatishtate.
So now, if you see this sequence, the last to be destroyed before fall down was buddhi. When the buddhi is destroyed, then a person falls. After the intelligence is lost, everything is lost. So here what Krishna is saying is buddhi paryavatishtate. Earlier it was buddhi nashatmanashati. Now it is buddhi paryavatishtate. Buddhi is established. So in this particular say Smriti Vibhrama, this particular verse is there. So, our Acharya explains what does Smriti refer to? Smriti refers to the instructions of Smriti literature, the instructions of Guru Sadhu Shastri. I'll explain how this works. So, relationship between Buddhi and Smriti. So the word Smriti at one level simply means memory. That's the common way you use it. Smriti. I have lost my memory. My Smriti ko gayi hai, you can see. But in the philosophical context, it refers more to memory of the words of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. So, to the extent we remember the words of Guru Sadhu Shastra, to that extent we become steady in our spiritual life. To the extent we forget the words of Guru Sadhu Shastra, to the extent we become weak in our spiritual life. So, buddhi, for all practical purposes, is equal to smriti. To the extent we remember the instruction of the Shastra, to that extent we have mukti. To the extent we forget, we don't have any mukti. So now, before we have this equality, equalization, we need to recognize that there is material buddhi and there is spiritual buddhi. So, material buddhi is a product of past karma. Spiritual buddhi is a gift of mercy. Spiritual buddhi is the gift that we receive by the mercy of Guru Sadhu Shastri. So, I mentioned this earlier that see, those of you are tired, you don't have to torture yourself and attend class. You can take rest, you can hear the recordings afterwards. But please feel free. There is no need for you to torture yourself by sleeping in the class. And this time our schedules are quite tight many times. And it's perfectly okay for me. You know, I tell the class organizers also that if some of you are tired, you don't have to come for the class. Because there's no need, because this is an educational course and we're not going to have many jokes or stories or something like that. So if on certain days you feel that you're very tired and it's difficult for you to attend the class, feel free to go and take a rest. I don't feel bad about it. Because I don't want to. There are two things I can do. One is I can dilute the content of the class and put in some jokes and put in some entertaining stories. But then that is not the purpose of the class. That's how I see it. I see that this is an educational course. And there has to be serious education. And it requires a certain level of interest and intelligence. And more than that, I feel interest and intelligence is not what you lack. But it requires a certain level of attention, which is sometimes difficult for us because our schedules are quite tight. So I feel that whenever you are tired, you can skip the class. I won't feel bad about it, and you can tell the authorities if you want, I can tell them about it. Or otherwise, you know, if you are having the class over here, you can go in my room also, take rest for 10-15 minutes, and you can come back here also. That's not a problem. There's no need to torture yourself. That is not the purpose. Or otherwise, if you want, you know, I can just recite the shloka and I can start telling stories. You know, for every verse, I can tell a story from this Purana about how this person fell down and how that person fell down. And I can do that. I can speak so many stories from Mahabharata Ramayana, but then we won't actually be, we'll be having a class that everyone will enjoy, but we'll not be doing justice to Bhagavad Gita. So that is the choice which we have. So I don't want to, as much as possible, go away from the focus of Bhagavad Gita. And now in the earlier classes that we had, I felt we had more interaction because there were question answers. So another thing, so the first option would be, as I said, that we can go in for having, what should we say, a lot of masala. But I would prefer not to do that in this class. The way I bring about interaction in the class is through question answers. And that was what we could do in the Ishopanishad classes. But unfortunately, because we have limited time, we are not able to have so many question answers over here. But what I think we could do is that I can slow down, and whenever you have questions, question answers are the most educational and productive way of having interactiveness in the class. Right? We can have some whole class discussions, we can have some pairing and discussions, but I feel like that dilutes the whole value of the class. As much as we could do justice to the content of the Gita as we have got it from these acharyas, we will not be able to do that if we go into that zone. And generally, the whole class discussions or the pairing, all these are happen. They are more relevant for, say, counseling sort of sessions rather than for education sessions. So that's why what we can do is we can have more question answers. We can slow down the pace a little bit. But overall, please feel free that if you are tired, Don't force you, don't torture yourself, because you will not do justice to yourself, and you will sort of, you will not be able to get benefit from the class also. So therefore, if any days you are tired, so the best would be that if before coming for the class you adjust your schedule a little bit so that you can get a little rest, so that you can be fresh over here. But if that is not possible, then you can take a little rest and then come a little late for the class also. That is also not a problem. And if you feel extremely tired within the class, you can take a brief nap and then you can come back for the class. That is also okay. But the problem is that I would like to take the class in a way that we do justice to our purpose. We are taking a serious subject and Vishnu Prabhupada has given us serious purpose. And I feel that we should discuss it in a particular way. Of course, as I said that I'm more of a educator than an entertainer or an educator than a crowd puller. So I don't want to go into that zone. So what we can do is, if you have any alternatives apart from that, I said there are three alternatives. One is I can make the class more entertaining. The other is that we can have it more interactive with question answers. Or we can go on as it is. Of course, if you have some other ways in which we can improve the course, and I'll have to have suggestions. You can give me anonymous suggestions also, and we can improve, we can do that. But I have certain constraints within which I operate. Because I want to do justice to the Bhagavad Gita, and it is a serious book. And I also want to make sure that we are making good progress when we are taking the Bhagavad Gita. That we are going to complete it within some reasonable limits of time. So therefore, please feel free. You try to take some rest before the class, come a little late for the class, you take rest, you come for the class. Or if you feel extremely sleepy, you can go and take a rest. And this is not in any way, it's not that when I'm speaking this, I'm angry with you or I'm criticizing you. Not at all like that. It's quite likely that if I had been sitting where you are sitting and somebody else would be in class, I might also have been sleeping. So I don't, I'm not criticizing in that sense because I myself would be the object of criticism. But we have to work in such a way that we can get the best output from what we are doing. So please feel free, if you are very tired, you can just tell me, you can go within the class. Even without telling, you can go. Or you can tell and go, whatever. Or you can come late. But when you are here for the class, try to be, if possible, having sufficient energy so that you can be awake. And we could do another thing is that, I was thinking that you just have one class per day. I talked with Vachan also about it. Because maybe two classes of Bhagavad Gita per day can become a little too intense philosophy. The other class can be a little lighter. Then things can be more balanced. So you can explore various options. But the important thing is if you have some other suggestions also, feel free to give that. And this is not at all a criticism. It's not that I'm angry or I'm criticizing you. It's just that we are trying to objectively discuss what is the best way in which we can go ahead with the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. So if you have any other suggestions, please give them money to anonymously or whatever, you can give it to me also. And we can work on it. So when Krishna talks about the difference between material and spiritual bhakti, what
happened? Here it has come up. Okay, it's come.
When Krishna talks about the difference between these areas, what is, I mentioned this earlier about the difference between material and spiritual bhakti. In the third canto it is said that the buddhi is the product of the mode of passion and the mind is the product of the goodness. That is because the mind is what maintains our material existence as goodness does. And buddhi is what creates new plans for material enjoyment. So here when Krishna is talking about buddhi, he is talking about the spiritual buddhi. So now the buddhi can be external, the buddhi can be internalized. So what does it mean external buddhi? That means you borrow intelligence from others. I don't understand the sense gratification leads to misery. I think sense gratification leads to enjoyment. But I borrow intelligence from others. That means yes. Gurus and Shastra are saying that this will lead to misery. Okay, I accept it. So, when we hear the words of Gurus and Shastra, we are in one sense borrowing their intelligence and acting according to it. But when we act according to it, Rāga, Dvesha, Mukta, when we do live according to this, then what happens is that buddhi becomes internalized. Then Krishna is saying buddhi paryavatishtate. buddhi becomes established. So Prabhupada writes in the introduction of Metro Instruction that one has to follow the rules of meditation strictly till one comes to the mode of goodness. And then one comes to the mode of goodness, how to advance further will be revealed from within. It's a very interesting statement. How to advance further will be revealed for one who comes to the mode of goodness. That doesn't mean that he rejects Uddhava Shastra, but that means that his own buddhi is established. His own buddhi becomes established. So right now, is our buddhi established? To some extent, surely. That's why we are trying to pursue transcendental path. But our buddhi is not very strongly established. So by the following of rules and regulations, Raga Dvesha Mukta Stone, our buddhi will become strongly established. And when the buddhi is strongly established, his prasade sarva dukkhana mahavirasya upajayate. When the purity is established, at that time all miseries go away, one becomes joyful. Why will we become joyful? Because the constant, here Acharya describes, what is the sarva dukkha, dukkhana mahani? Now still the misery will be there of material existence. Then what is the, how is it that all the miseries go away? So it's described that this refers to the misery of craving for material enjoyment. Sarva dukkhana hani. Dukkhana hani means destruction. So remember I quoted this verse from the Uddhava Gita, dukkham kama sukha peksha. So, Lord Krishna tells Uddhava, what is misery? Misery is the expectation of material enjoyment. When we expect that, material things I'll get enjoyment, that expectation still keeps agitating. I will like it. Where will I get it? Where will I get it? Will I get it? Will I get it? Won't I get it? Will I get in trouble if I do it? Will I be able to get up with it? That whole complexity of thought are there, that keeps agitating more. So, dukkham kama sukha peksha. And just the freedom of that agitation is itself a big relief. Prasade sarva dukkhana hani. So when we get the mercy of the Lord, all the cravings go away. And so that means the cravings of this dukkha is sarva dukkhana hani means destruction of cravings. Cravings for material enjoyment. And then prasanna chetaso yashu. Prasanna chetaso, prasanna chetana is what? Here when one realizes that I am Satchitananda Atma, then what happens? That realization of our Satchitananda nature. So when we realize that, then we become joyful. So on one side, the external craving goes away. Second side is internal happiness experience. Then, at that time, buddhi paravikrishti. One's intelligence becomes steady. That means, at that time, we don't need any external supervision, external chastisement, external instruction. We have to give up sincerity, we have to give up sincerity. We ourselves have realized it. We ourselves have realized it. And then, we do what is good for us by our own intelligence. We don't need any external supervision, chastisement, instruction. Chastisement means they don't do this. Supervision means, are you doing that? Who is watching? Instruction means, chastisement means punishment for doing wrong. Instruction means reminder, don't do wrong. Supervision means watching. Somebody is catching, so I won't do wrong. But we don't need any of that because we understand that this is actually what is good for me. Buddhi parivartishtate. So now, Krishna will describe in the next verse what will happen if the buddhi is not established like this. Nasti buddhi rayuktasya.
Nasti buddhi rayuktasya.
Nacha yuktasya bhavana.
Nacha yuktasya bhavana.
Nacha bhaveta vishanti.
Nacha bhaveta shanti.
Ashantasya kutah sukham.
Ashantasya kutah sukham.
So, if there is no buddhi, if there is, one is not yukta. Now what is this verse? This verse is actually going, where is the word yukta coming earlier? It came in 2.61. Yukta asita manpara. So if one is not yukta, then one can't have buddhi. one can't have bhavana, bhavana is in steady mind, one cannot have shanti, and one cannot have sukha. So Krishna is emphasizing even in this section, even in the section on how to control the senses, he said the crucial point is yukta asita mantra. Even in the section on how to engage the senses, the central point is yukta. Krishna said, if you are not yukta, you cannot have a control, have a steady intelligence, you cannot have a controlled mind, you cannot have peace, you cannot have happiness. So now Srila Prabhupada's purport in this is classic. Prabhupada says that many people may pretend that I am very peaceful, but he says that one who is engaged without a relationship with Krishna is certainly always in distress and is without peace. However, as much he may make a show of peace and spiritual advancement in life, people can put on an external facade of peace for some time, but if they are not internally connected with Krishna, actually they are internally insecure, they are internally lonely, internally unsatisfied, and that will come out at particular time. So he says Krishna consciousness is a self-manifested peaceful condition which can be achieved only in relationship with Krishna. And so here the word self-manifested is extremely important. Many people are like, come down, and they are trying to externally bring in peace, externally bring in peace. But here he is saying a self-manifested peaceful condition. That means from internal into the connection with Krishna, one is peaceful. So actually a pure devotee, even internally very externally very active, but internally is very peaceful. So we conclude with this point. There's a difference between peace of mind and peace of heart. Peace of mind peace of heart. So in the Bible there is a phrase called the peace that passeth all understanding. That means the peace from a material point of view, when a person is in trouble, he will be very miserable. But if one has taken shelter of God, then you will have a peace that passeth all understanding. You don't understand how a person can be peaceful in this situation. So the material point of view is completely disrupted. But actually, peaceful because it's connected with Krishna. The peace of mind just means basically absence of agitated thoughts and desires. Peace of heart is the connection of the soul with Krishna through love that offers shelter to the soul. So when we connect with Krishna to love, then through love, then we feel shelter. Yes, now I'm home. I'm under my Lord's protection. So whatever happens, I am protected. So this peace of mind is what religious people want. And they may get it to some extent by going to some peaceful situation, by trying to do some regulation of breath or whatever. But that is unspeakable. Because the desires are there. The desires will agitate them again. And even if somebody curbs the desires, still the desires can pop up their head sometime. But when a devotee is connected with Krishna, then just like sometimes in a crowded local, you may see a baby sleeping on the shoulder of a mother. Now there is so much crowd and there is noise and there is this, the baby is peacefully sleeping. Why? You know, I am under the shelter of my. So like that, for a devotee, is completely sheltered under Krishna. And that peace which is there, which comes from Krishna's shelter, that is not something which can be artificially pretended. Somebody can pretend to have a peaceful mind. Somebody can act peaceful externally. Prabhupada is talking about something deeper. Self-manifested peaceful condition that can be achieved only in relationship with Krishna. Thank you very much. Shri Shobhishati Jai. Shri Prabhupada. Sorry, Shri Prabhupada. Jai. Shri Prabhupada ki Jai. Gauri Bhakti ki Jai. Jai Gauri Prima. Thank you very much.